Right then. So, I'll let you apply that.
Okay. And anywhere?
As soon as you're not running around, then I think it's just safe to tuck it down
yeah,
here.
Go for it.
Be mindful of that when you stand up.
That'll be embarrassing.
Okay, so, Tori's going to tell us her story. Just say, give us a hello, so we can check your speaking voice.
Hello.
Oh, there we go. Okay. I will switch this up again, just
to
keep you focused.
Okay.
I'll give you a wave.
Okay, thank you. I sat at the back and said, I don't want to follow that. I'm going to sound a lot more materialistic, unfortunately. So we're obviously very different, and I want to tell you about my journey. It's not as impressive, and definitely, like I said, I'm going to come off a lot more selfish, but bear with me. So I want to apologise because I have had a manic week and running my own business, these things happen, and I plan to sort of memorise my little bullet point notes, and I haven't had a chance, so you're going to have to bear with me. The organisers, who have done an amazing job, and I've told lots of them that I was so jealous, I wish things like this happened when I was here, they sent me some bullet points or some sort of things to consider so I could share my story to kind of, I guess, keep me on track. So basically, I'm Vicky. I run children's nurseries and preschools. I have a multi-million pound company now. I employ 55 people. I've been doing it for 6 years. I've won quite a few awards, and I'll come on to those later. We are top of the bar in our industry. We're often outstanding. I worked very, very hard to sort of design my brand and what I wanted. And to make sure that 6 years later, I've had two kids in that time as well, that we are still delivering the same brand, all 55 of my team, every single one of them buys into what I believe in my ethos. And I want to tell you about that and how I got to sort of Lancaster to there. So as it said, I did English literature here, and I suppose kind of before I even came to university, my story began when I'm the oldest of eight children, and we grew up in Tooting originally, and we were very, very poor. We lived in a lovely council house, and I'm the only one of the eight of us who went to university, and it was a huge thing for me to come here, and I was incredibly proud even just to sort of sit in lectures and seminars and be part of it. And I loved doing English because it was something I was very passionate about, and even from an early age I knew that what I had to do to get to university, which was going to be my ticket out of my council estate and my future plans, was to just do something I knew I was good at. And I love it, which is a happy byproduct, but it was to do something I knew I could succeed in. And you know, I chose my GCSE subject purely on that as well. I had to get good grades to get to the next step, do the next step, keep going. And I suppose my whole life I've been fairly driven like that. When I was here in my third year, actually, I'm a black belt kickboxer, so I thought, well, how can I make money out of that? I need some more money. I have two jobs. I work Top Wetherspoons, sort of three nights of the seven, and I earned enough on those three nights that I could enjoy the other four nights. But I ran a self-defense class, so I used the PC lab in Pendle, and I printed out loads of flyers, and I delivered them all myself in my little rucksack. And I'm a black belt kickboxer, so I did women and children's self-defense classes, and I ran them in Galgate. And I negotiated with the pub if we could use their back room, that I would bring everybody from the class afterwards. We got it for free. We'd come in and we'd have a drink afterwards, and we're all sitting there all sweaty with all the bags everywhere. I'm like, just have one, please, although you've got to pay for the hall. And you know, and that was great, and that gave me a bit more money so that I could do the things I wanted to do my third year. Even before that, I used to organise after Christmas with all my siblings, let's do a little auction and swap presents, and okay, well, that present's worth more than, so you give me 50p of your pocket money, and little things. And I was a babysitter, and I remember my dad's work getting Windows 95, which was huge because it meant I could print myself little business cards, and I'd go around and hand them out. That slightly backfired because up until I was about 18, I was sort of babysitting almost every evening of the week, so I had all this money, I had nothing to do with it. Anyway, so I came here, and I, like I said, I loved English. I joined the Better Reading Programme at LUSU. Now, as I've said, I'm the oldest of eight children, so I've heard the word bossy a lot in my life, and I've heard I've had all seven children dumped on me at various times, and my job was to cook them dinner, get them to school, pick them up from school, take them to school, be on hand, you know, if they needed me to help them with their homework and things. So I suppose I've always sort of had a kind of nurture inside of me. I'd make their sandwiches in the morning and everything. And when I joined the Better Reading Programme here, I went to Skirton High School, I think it was twice a week, I did it for two terms here, and I mentored a girl who had a lower than average reading age, and I did it in my free time, and I loved doing it because I sort of assumed that I would end up being a teacher. And I thought, you know, English degree, great, I'll go on and do a PGCE. When I finished uni, or sort of coming up to my third year, I thought, actually, do you know, I'm in so much debt, and I'm working so hard, I have two jobs, I've been working since I was 15 alongside it, or I worked in New Look. And I got offered an amazing job from New Look. And I sort of thought, well, I can't get in more debt. I can't. I need to. I want to buy a house. I don't want to live in a council's debt. I don't want to go back to that. And there's nothing wrong with it. But that's not what I want. And I sort of thought, well, okay, well, I need to earn money. So I took the job at New Look, and it was a multi-site role, and I worked all around the Northwest up here. And then they headhunted me to become a visual merchandiser. So I got to work abroad and open lots of new stores, and I picked up lots of different skills. So I paid my dues. My first hourly rate was £3.28 an hour, and my bus fare to get to and from work for a four-hour shift was £4.20. And all this stuff stays in your head because you work so bloody hard for it. And this role was amazing. They put me on planes, they sent me abroad, they sent me to hotels. I got to go down and have this team meeting at 4 a.m. We'd have like breakfast buttons and baps and things and say, right, okay, you guys are going to make the shoes here. I want the cash desk over here. I want my fitting rooms here. And actually, we had a range called 915 back then for the 9 to 15-year-olds. And I was like, right, we've got a huge market here. We've got lots of teenagers. Let's put that center, front and center. And I really enjoyed doing that, and it was great, but it wasn't sort of something I could do alongside working or having my own family. And my mum was a teenage mum when she had me, and I suppose, as much as I wanted to get away from lots of the things she did, I did want to be a young parent. And so I thought, well, I can't do this. I got headhunted to go to Tesco, and I did all their big gaps in London. So I moved down south again. And I worked so bloody hard. I was doing stupid hours. But the reason I'm telling you all this, and I did points, I'm totally going off it. The reason I'm telling you this is because I feel like sometimes you do have to pay your dues. And I learned so much from the managers. Some of them were great, and I still think about them now when I have a really tough decision or I've got an HR problem. And some of them were just bloody awful. We had this one man at Tesco Watford, and he would have people by the scruff of their neck up against a wall, bellowing in their face if they've done something wrong, spit coming out everywhere. And I think that's not how you manage. I know that, and I'm 19. You know, that was inappropriate. And so when I came to starting my own business, all these years working for some great managers and some rubbish managers have shaped me and formed who I wanted to be. And so I would recommend anybody going out and, you know, like I say, paying your dues and going and working for other companies, because I learned so many different things. I mean, as you saw, I don't have a business degree. I have an English degree. And anyway, so I should probably try and stick to this. So I'm near enough sticking to it. So what happened was I did this job for Tesco, and it was fantastic, but it was crazy, crazy hours. And I did a year at one particular group of stores, and we had groups, so I had about 5 stores in my group. And in one of my stores, I made a £1.2 million profit on the year before. And I thought, if I'm doing this for Sir Terry Leahy, who comes in and gets me to Christmas shop for his family, I really should be doing this for myself. All this effort and all these late nights and everything. So I thought about what I wanted to do and my earlier ambitions and sort of what, I guess, what my natural sort of career path was going to be. And I thought, well, I don't want to go and do a PGCE now. I still want to earn money. I've got a mortgage. I'm getting married soon. And so I wrote a business plan, and I went to the local council, and I said, well, I want to open a nursery. I'm not qualified. I'll pay people to come and work with me who are qualified. I'll run the business side. And it sort of started the fact that in my village or in the town that we lived in, there wasn't a nursery there. So there was a gap in the market. I went and did some volunteer work at local nurseries. And I did this alongside working my job at the same time. So I couldn't give up that until I knew that I had a solid business plan and that people would invest in me. I wrote a very long business plan, which I remember Googling because I didn't know what a business plan looked like. So if any of you do business, you kind of already one head step in the game. And I did that, and I took it to NatWest eventually after a few other banks. But NatWest gave me £55,000. And I had to tell them what my 10-year plan was going to be. And I stood there going, well, I've picked my brand name's going to be Daisy Nursery, and then all of my nurseries are going to be called a Daisy. So I've Sunshine Daisy was my first one. Now there are 14 types of daisies, so I kind of sold it to them on the fact that I was going to open 14 nurseries, and they actually loved it, and they said, okay, right, yeah, we can see, you know, crack on, get started, and you know, pay us back in X amount of time. This was in 2009, so as Ian said, it was a really, really tough economy. Things then got worse for the economy, but nurseries were still a green light industry, and I grew it. So I grew it from scratch. I found a beautiful building, and I decided, well, this is the one. It was a grade one listed building. It was very unusual. I really liked my business. My sort of thing that made us special was that I wanted to offer really, really top-notch premium care with the educational side of it, but also I wanted it to be very unique. And I didn't, you know, the nurseries turn a penny everywhere at the moment, but we still stand out. Two of my nurseries have a 2-year waiting list. One of them I opened in April. I was just saying to somebody else, it hit 99.97% occupancy yesterday, and we, you know, we our projections. are through the roof. I'm struggling to keep up, to be honest. I'm taking on more and more staff at the time. And I think I wrote down one of the things that I've sort of struggled with over the years is that it's been this juggernaut of a thing that I've never felt completely qualified to be able to lead. And I rely on my gut instinct a lot. I rely on employing people, as I said, who are better than me. I employ people who are early as teachers. I've got 9 of them. My senior team, one of them comes from an HR background. And I make sure that when we have discussions, I'm very opinionated about a lot of things because I've always looked at it with my parent hat on and kind of my business hat on. I make sure that they challenge me, and I make sure I don't employ yes people. I make sure that when we sit around our table, one of them says, actually, no, Vicky, I disagree with this because of X, Y, and Z. And if they've got a valid argument, then I'm not going to say no. I'm not going to not listen to them. We tell our preschoolers, you've got 2 ears and you've got 1 mouth. So in our boardroom, we try and do the same as well. I like the fact that they are very passionate like me, and I employ people who fit in with my ethos. And when I'm recruiting, I might see 20 people for one role. But if that person is going to be working in your industry, I mean, we do very long hours in our industry, and representing you at the ground level, you know, it's all very well and good me having a pretty mission statement on my website, but if they're not doing that and they're not embodying it, then my brand's shot, and no one will believe in me, no one will trust me. So reputation is really important in our industry, and like I said, it was really important for me that I make sure that I'm surrounded by people who challenge me constantly and make me want to be the best I can be. Totally not sticking to this. Right, let's have a quick look at what else I was meant to talk about. So as I said, the team I have at the moment, I've got a senior team, and one of the hardest things I had to do was delegate. So it was my first baby. I did everything. I grew it from the ground up. You know, if the sink U-bend got blocked so many times when we first opened, and I was down there with my gloves on trying to unblock it. I was working in the rooms. I was handing over with parents. I was doing everything. I was the first one there, the last one home. I mean, anyone who wants to run their own business, you have to put in that. Of course you do. However, 6 years down the line, I'm sort of thinking, well, you know, or 5 years down the line, I was thinking, I can't sustain this. I can't sustain top quality in all my nurseries unless I relax a little bit and let some people help me. And so I started thinking, okay, well, I've got my nursery teams in place. Now I need a senior team. So now I employ a quality and training manager. And I'm really, really passionate about training our next generation of quality childcare providers. So we spent £21,000 last year on training to improve the quality. She oversees that and she mentors them all through, whether it's a level 2 or level 7, we've got postgraduates with us. And then I also employed an operations manager. So, you know, the phone call that goes at 3 a.m, that your power's gone, your fridge is gone, can someone come in? I can ring her and be like, Claire, could you go in, please? And she does. And I've also got a facilities man who would probably go in and help with that circumstance. But it's been really important for me that I have learned to delegate a little bit. And that's not something that comes very naturally to me. So that's been a huge learning curve. I think the hardest thing for me was, I'm totally skipped the how your time at Lancaster fits into all this. Oh, I suppose, okay, yes, I will talk about this. As I said, I felt really empowered by being here. I'm very, it was lovely to be around other people who were like me and who, you know, wanted to do things and had these great aspirations for their lives. But it was something that I think was quite overwhelming at the time. And looking back on it now, I think, oh, you know, did you make the most of that opportunity or did you not there? I threw myself into campus life. It was the first time I'd ever felt free. And I remember queuing for Freshers' Fair and seeing 2 people dressed as Harry Potter and Hermione with sticks between their legs pretending to fly. And I thought, oh my God, that looks fantastic. So I joined the lacrosse team and I did that for 3 years. I joined the exec, I wrote articles for Scan, and I really threw myself into being here and having like, come into things like this. I would have loved to have come to something like this. And I think that's so important. It's not just about what you're studying, because for me, my major, although English has taught me how to write a pretty website, and you know, I can correct a few people's punctuation and things like that, and I can talk to people about articles and things that they want me to talk about, anything else I do is not to do with my major. But what university taught me was, it's not coming across now, but how to speak intelligently and how to have the skills to kind of be able to chair a meeting and have the confidence. I had to stand up in presentations and talk about Othello and, you know, and how to do that and how to, I stand up in front of my 55 people and next year projected to have 68 if all things go accordingly. We have an annual conference every year and I stand there and say, well, this is what's going on in the industry. This is what I want you to do. These are my focuses for you. These are the things we achieved last year. And I need them to do that because I need them to all hear it from me. And so Lancaster taught me all that. Lancaster gave me the confidence to think critically. And like I said, it also taught me to stand on my own 2 feet and not perhaps be relied upon by other people so much. The biggest thing, I'm so going to be over time, make sure you tell me. The biggest challenge I've had is I was 24 when I opened my first business. And I got a lot of prejudice. I got a lot of quite hostile People, perhaps, what do you know about anything? Well, I run a multi-million pound business now, so suck it. And, you know, I got a lot of that, and I think if you do open a business quite young, you have to be prepared to face it. You know, it's even worse when I've got my two kids in tow, right pram face. I think sometimes it's a blessing in some respects because I have so much energy and enthusiasm, and you know, I employ people. My eldest employee should hate me for saying this, but she's 69. She's not going anywhere. I love her. She gives the best cuddles in the office. And it takes a lot to win people over to kind of say, yeah, I know I could be your granddaughter, but come and work with me, buy into what I'm saying, and together we can deliver this. And that will always win out, no matter how old you are or whatever you look like. And I think that was a steep learning curve. I had to go through sort of two different accountants. I met my first accountant and he just didn't like me. We didn't click, you know, and his firm bust last year. So my accountant, who I've got at the moment, he's been with me and he believed in me. When I was heavily pregnant with my second child, I was sitting on the floor of my office, just legs out, and I was like, I can't get to the desk. And he was like, come on then. And he sat on the floor with me and we did my year accounts and my profit and loss, you know, because sometimes you have to be a bit like that and business is all individual and unique. I really, really need to concentrate on this, sorry. I have put here that you have to grow thick skin, and I suppose that ties into it. You do, people our own, you know, I'm pretending I'm your age here. People my age, when I was setting it up, there's a lot of responsibility. It is all consuming, and I think you shouldn't be naive. If you are planning on doing something like this, you shouldn't be naive in thinking it's not. It is all consuming, and there are times when, you know, your friends might be doing something else, and you have to say, no, I can't, I've got to be there to do a show round or this, and I have to do that because I want that person's money, I want that person's custom, and that comes first because building my business has to come first. And so you make choices like that where you put your business first. Like I put here, it was also very physically challenging having my own two children, if any of you have got kids. I've had about 4 years of no sleep near enough, the three businesses and the two children. And people always say, oh, why don't you take maternity leave? Well, if I did, no one would have got paid. And if I did, then God knows what would happen in my absence. I don't micromanage as much as I used to, but I had to because it was my business, it was my baby. And, you know, it put a roof over my head and my kids' head and food on the table. So I wanted it to do well and I was prepared to be there to make it do well. But also I had a baby in tow and that's difficult. However, when I think back about it, I was to say my son, he got meningitis when he was 13 days old. We were blue lighted down to the paediatrics in Southampton, and I have one vivid memory. It was a horrible time and I try not to think about it too much, but one vivid memory of sitting next to him, he was in the hospital bed, just crying, constantly crying. I'd given birth 3 days, 13 days ago, and I was crying, and we were told to say goodbye to him that night, and I was doing my payroll on my phone because my girls wouldn't have got paid otherwise, and you know, in the midst of all that horrible, horrible stuff going on, I was aware that if I didn't pay my girls, they might not be able to pay their mortgages or put food on their kids' tables. And so I did it, and you find ways to do it. Are you telling me to wrap up? Because I've still got two pages, sorry.
Tell us what questions you want us to ask.
I can't do that.
No, I'm going to put you
short. No, that's fine. It's waffle, it's fine.
There's a lot.
Yeah.
There's so much there. I'm also going to work out anybody find space for a question gap in all of that. If anybody's got something, shout out. Otherwise, I've got something and you can pick and choose anything you want to have.
Okay, thank you.
Saving one.
Yeah, one of the biggest challenges for entrepreneurs is when they have a success and it starts to grow fast, mm-hmm. is letting go of your baby. You said you'd like to delegate. Mm-hmm.
No sleep. No sleep. I was making rushed decisions and I was replying to emails and then someone would talk to me about it and I didn't even write that. And I was doing it at 4 a.m, you know, nursing my child or something. And I think I sort of realised, probably after the birth of my first son, that if this was going to be the success I wanted, and obviously I wanted it to, I didn't want to just rest on my laurels. You know, I took that money, I paid it all back within the first 12 months, and then the other two businesses have been grown out of the money that we've made. I've grown them all organically. I didn't want to sort of cap it and say, right, everyone take a 10-year break, let's just do this for now while I bring up my two children, and then we'll revisit the growth of the company. So I thought something has to give. I have to trust other people a bit more, and I'm not naturally a very trusting person, so that was probably the biggest thing. I had one lady who I employed. She was my very first nursery manager back in 2009, and when you're a new business, you don't have a reputation necessarily out there to get the best people. And so we were very new. And I think I will say nurseries, I think it's 2/3 of preschools and nurseries either break even or make a loss. So not many people expect you to succeed when you're first year. I employed her. She was wrong. I knew it when I was interviewing her, but I didn't have any choice. I was 8 months pregnant and I sacked her. And I thought, the reason I've done that, it would have been easier just to have the baby and kind of come back afterwards and dealt with it. But the problem I needed dealing with, it wasn't making my life any easier. And so I made a really horrible decision and I just had to do it and follow through. We ended up in a tribunal that I won. And it was hell, but it was the right decision, because then after that I thought, right, I need to find people I trust. I need to find people that I can relax and know that they're going to look after this. But also, you know, I want them to want it as much as me. And I've got people who are always saying, oh, can we buy shares in your company? I'm like, no. But, you know, they want to be part of it and they want to deliver what, you know, they're very passionate about delivering quality childcare. And everything else, that's all I care about. Everything else I can deal with at 4 a.m, that's all I care about for my staff. Yeah.
John.
Thank you.
Hello. Will you exit?
Oh, good question. I got it valued the other day. not to necessarily do that, it was from our insurance purposes. It's so difficult. I mean, I heard the valuation for the company, and it was over £1 million, and I just thought, oh God, now would be a good time, because we've got the 33 hours coming in from the new government, you know, the government strategy. Every hour that we give out, we have to give out 15 free hours a week to children who are 3 and 4. We make a loss. Every nurse who makes a loss on them because the government don't pay you enough money. That's another thing. I had to sit next to an MP at an awards due a couple of weeks ago, and he didn't get to eat his food because I was just like, tell me about this, how are we going to do this? And he was like, I'm just wanting a crab starter. I know, he had the worst seat in the house. But that is something that we're thinking about, because we're thinking, well, how can we deliver quality childcare, making a loss on 30 hours as opposed to 15? Is now the time to get out? It's so difficult, because whilst that sounds like an amazing amount of money, I've got the rest of my life to think about, and you know, and my passion is to do this. I mean, one of the things I wrote down was my nurseries, we actually offer the 15 funded hours to 2-year-olds, and so many nurseries don't do that. They choose not to because they make a loss, and obviously it's a good business decision not to. However, from my point of view, these underprivileged 2-year-olds are the ones who need the nurseries the most, and so we should be throwing open our doors to them. And I suppose from an emotional point of view, they're the ones. I had a 2-year-old who joined us who didn't speak a single word, and his mum, you know, said, well, I don't have time. He just sits in front of the TV 10 hours a day. Within 6 months, little sentences were coming out, and, you know, he was kind of getting involved with everything. And he's the one, if the funding had been taken away, he wouldn't come to us. And so when I think about it in like individual terms, rather than kind of big figures and profit and loss sheets and everything, I think, no, I couldn't ever leave, because not enough people do what we do. So until more do, then maybe I'll leave.
Would you say, in your opinion, that NatWest were investing in that business plan, or were they investing more in you?
Me.
You seem like a very vivacious.
Thank you. This is still on no sleep. Measure me 6 years ago. Me, I think so. Because it was the same business plan that I took to lots of banks, but when I went to NatWest, something clicked with me and the business advisor and then his boss. And we had a really great conversation, and you know, they still support me now. I go in and see them, they come and visit the nurseries, they come to all my launch parties, we have Ofsted Outstanding parties every time we get an Ofsted Outstanding, because we're Ofsted Outstanding in all areas. They're incredible. Well, it's hard to get. It's bloody hard to get. They're incredibly supportive. But I do think, yes, looking back on all my meetings, as professional as I am, it probably was me. My husband, he owns half the nursery. I gave him half. I think I was sleep deprived at the time. And my accountant did. He phoned me the next day and he said, "Do you want me to change it that you've got 51%?" And I was like, "What are you even talking about?" But no, I gave him half. And he says all the time that, you know, he works very hard for the company too. But there's no way it would have happened without me kicking everyone up the butt and driving it and finding ways out of problems. Because, yeah, like I said, lots of nurses go under. The reason I'm not prepared, I will share my story very quickly, if that's okay, was because on a week ago, a nursery 5 minutes down the road from my new nursery went into liquidation. And the owners ran off to the Cotswolds to buy a converted chapel or something. And they had 70 parents hammering on their door. They didn't give anyone notice. Their staff were trying to get into work. They had, I think, 18 members of staff. So I sent my girls down there with leaflets as soon as I found out. And then we had 21 show rounds on the day. And then we had people coming around with their children. We had to provide emergency childcare for them. And then all this week they've been settling. We've been trying to help these children adjust to moving from one to another. But it's a really tough market. Even though nurseries are a green light industry, according to NatWest and Barclays and all people like that, you have to stand out, because I think parents have got so many more options now. You know, they've got grandparents and they're doing a lot more childminders, nannies. It's a hugely competitive industry. Out of the people I interviewed from the nursery that closed down, I think about 11 of them are going to go and be nannies for the parents. I'm having to fight them for the business. Sorry.
No, don't apologise. I'm a relatively recent parent.
Mm. Oh, congratulations.
Sleep deprivation. Mm. I get the feeling you wouldn't sleep anyway.
I mean, that's the other thing. When we talk about possibly exiting, my husband's like, God almighty, you'd go insane at home all day. What would you do? Actually, one of the things that I have started doing, and this was a point, so thank you for bringing that up. So I'm going to get a PA, I've decided, I'm far too scatty. One of the things that we started doing last year, nowhere near as impressive here, but I run charity days. So one of the things that I used to do when I worked for Tesco was they would ask you to go out and pick a charity and work. So we donated 500 hours of my staff's working hours. Well, I paid them to work and they went to a charity for 500 hours last year, and hopefully we'll continue to do that each year. I think we're aiming for about 600 this year. It doesn't sound like much, but it was also something that was personal to them. The only thing that they had to do, the only condition, was that they had to get a cheesy photo for me, because I've got a massive big board of all their cheesy photos at work and in my office. And that was really nice. And the other thing we do is pass it on campaigns. In the areas that the nurseries are in, they're fairly affluent, but very, very close to us, there's some not so affluent areas. And we organise a big pass it on campaign. We've got about 205 children at the nurseries at the moment. And we put notices out saying, please donate any unwanted clothes, good condition clothes, toys, women's clothes, toiletries, nappies. We get hordes in, and we do it every December. We've just started it now. We collect it all in, we sort it, process it, and then we deliver it. There are three women and children's refuges very close to us, and we go and take it to them. And that takes time. My girls and I last year were in almost every weekend in December processing it, sorting it. But again, it's something that now that we're getting bigger, I'd like to move more into that side of it now that that the business is financially sustainable and can continue to grow at the rate it's growing.
Risk.
Starting me again.
I was just interested, you mentioned you've taken a business plan around banks and you're trying to get a business plan around. What's your view on business plans now? Would you write one? Do you stick to this? Is it more of an iterative thing? Do you live by it?
I wrote it on my honeymoon, so I know, I'm so romantic. We were in Hawaii and there was 4 days at sea and I was a bit seasick, so I started thinking, right, we're married now, we're going to have kids. My husband was like, I just want to go and play golf. I started writing it, and the five things I came up with were my mission statement, and that's not changed. So from the very beginning, that's what I knew. If I was going to go into this industry and get back to sort of educating and being part of children's lives, I had to stick to those five things. I wasn't going to go into it and make it a sort of half-hearted nursery or do it to make money of your own Jimmy Choo's, you know. And I think from that, that's kept rigid the whole way through, and we talk about that a lot. My girls, when they're inducted, they follow this process to keep them within the mission statement. How, and in terms of business plan, I update it fairly regularly, so I'm not giving it to banks anymore, but I like to just review, revisit, evaluate where I've got, what I decided. I mean, as I was saying, we have an annual conference, and I was so proud this year when I stood up. I had all of last year's aims, and bearing in mind all my girls came to the conference last year, so they knew I wasn't fitting. I had all my last year's aims and what we were going to set out to do in 12 months, and every single one of them we achieved or bettered, and that was magnificent. And then I set some really tough ones for this year, and they were sitting there groaning at me. But I think there are things that can kind of deviate and throw spanners in the works, but otherwise I'm pretty clear on what I want to achieve and when and how, and I think that's probably what's kept us going on the track and the trajectory that we are on. So.
Thank you.
That's okay. I didn't finish. It's fine. Can we take this off?
Down.